Now, it's The Six with the Jeff Calkins Show.
Joined now by the voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, Eric Castletime. Eric, how are you?
Jeff, I'm great. I just created a new Olympic sport, though.
Which is?
As I was waiting for your phone call, it was called Get All of the Recycling Out of Your Car Before They Call. So I think I would be a gold medalist.
I apologize because I gave you a long time to do that. So I apologize.
You're good. Like, I got gas and I was waiting and then I was listening. But, you know, what you were saying was prevalent, and you got to congratulate Jeffrey on this big week. And I concur. I've seen many of my friends, including Rob Fisher, every summer when they cut out sugar-filled sodas that they tend to drop weight quickly. I myself went a different route and did hip replacement surgery and have lost 12 pounds.
So did you?
It's a little more painful.
When did you do hip replacement surgery?
On the 1st. I finally just had no cartilage left in my left hip, and it was bone on bone and waking up in the middle of the night. And so
how old are you?
I tipped my cap.
You're a young man.
47. Yeah, too much of thinking I was an athlete all my life. The belief that I could actually play that led me on to pickup games and rec leagues and being the idiot that would dive on the floor for a ball that mattered like nothing at all, even that game, probably put some wear and tear. And 3 years of college lacrosse, it just kind of wore out. And I give a tip of the cap to Campbell Clinic and Patrick Toy for handling it. And, you know, people are amazed because literally it's 3 weeks ago today and I'm up walking around with very little limp whatsoever.
Wow.
I'm still not pushing it. My doctor, my physical therapist would probably beat the crap out of me if I started trying to do much more than I'm doing. But I was able to get in the pool yesterday with my son for Father's Day and have some fun.
Was it traced literally to just wear and tear? Running?
Yeah.
Tennis? Is it wear and tear at 47? It wasn't a specific injury.
That's pretty much what it was. I mean, like 3 years of a contact, pretty contact-filled sport in college. And then literally after college, I played everything. I played adult baseball pretty competitively for about 4, 5, 6 years before I moved here. And then continued to play like flag football and rec league basketball and then tennis and golf and just doing all kinds of things.
Okay, I know you play hoops and I know you play tennis. Will you be able to do either with a new hip?
I at the basketball thing's yet to be seen. Tennis, they said I'd be fine. Golf was fine. Golf would be fine. They said 6 weeks for golf, but you know, I'll take it as it comes. If those are done and it's never going to be the same, then I'll have to decide if I want to do it or not. They said that I should be good though. The advancements in this stuff's amazing. I mean, it really is. And the X-ray is hilarious because it looks like I have a bionic hip, and you know, probably one day I'll have to have my right hip done, and it'll probably be even better. But I think the scariest thing was when I came out of the spinal epidural and my lower extremities were still paralyzed. They said, move your legs. And I just looked at the nurse and said, I'm trying. And she said, okay, well, it hasn't worn off yet. And I'm like, okay, well, let's hope it does. Thanks.
God. Well, congratulations on the, and then you lost, and you've lost 14 pounds?
I lost 10. 10 as of now, but I don't know. I haven't weighed my, last time I checked, I lost 10 in about the first 2.5 weeks. So. But I was, unfortunately, with the injury, I wasn't able to really work out. So I could go for about 20 minutes, and then it would just be painful, and I couldn't really follow through on it. And then with everybody being stuck at home and all this craziness, you know, when they allowed groups of 5 or 6 or people come over, we had enough space, and people were kind of going stir crazy. My girlfriend had friends that she worked with that just needed a place to go, so our house kind of became the place to come play Uno or dominoes and hang out and watch a movie.
Well, congratulations on the new hip. Are we going to have an NBA season? Or what do you think's happening here? I know you're not speaking.
Yeah,
for
you know
the
numbers. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was reading that this weekend and I was listening to what you were saying. The numbers obviously have gone up, and I think that's going to happen. I'm of the belief that, and it's just my own personal opinion, Adam Silver is determined to get this done. He wanted to be the first, you know, of the major sports back. As he said, we were the first to close down. We want to be the first back and give our fans something to hold on to. So I think that they will. I think there will be some players concerned. I think the way they've handled that was saying, hey, you guys can not go if you don't want to go, and there'll be no penalty. You're not going to get paid if you don't play, which I think is fair.
Right.
You know, some people are like, oh, these billionaire owners can take a loss. Yeah, that's true. But what people don't factor in, and, I, you know, this is from a different league, that, you know, an friend of mine in the NHL, the team he works for, they only had 5 home games left, but they generate about $3 to $4 million of revenue per home game, in between ticket sales and apparel sales and concessions and all the things that go into a night. Well, we had 9 left, and let's be honest about it. There was going to be some excitement around those 9 games, especially if the Grizzlies had come back with at least 1 win on that road trip, if not 2, which we thought was very possible. They were going to start selling. They were going to sell a lot of tickets, and that's a lot of revenue. And so, I think people that are getting on the owners in terms of the ones that are doing the right things, and I think every sport right now, other than baseball, the owners seem to be doing the right things. We're saying, hey, we may need to cut the players' pay just a smidge because we're not playing the games and there's no ticket revenue. I don't think that's unfair. I know the players don't love that. I think there's something that can be done to negotiate that. But the things that scare me the most is if they did walk out and the players said, hey, we're not doing this, and they ended the season, what could happen to the collective bargaining agreement? But, right. That's a debate for if that happens. I don't want to even get into that. So I think it's going to happen. I think the regulations, as Jeffrey said and you said, in Orlando are such that it can't be much safer than that. And at some point, I'm just of the opinion we've got to give it a shot. And like you said, the cases have spiked, like you said, but the death numbers have gone down. So at what point does this become one where cases go up? And yes, there will be, unfortunately, some people that don't live through it, but if that's every virus we look at, in my opinion, we're going to be living in our houses for the rest of our lives.
And obviously the players are going to be in a bubble. Now the complication is that the people who take care of them will not be in the bubble. My understanding, we had Brevin on, he believes you all will likely be doing it remotely. Do you know yet? Has a decision been made?
No, it hasn't been made, but just by all the indications, by all the things they've said, it seems that seems the most likely scenario. I can't tell you how many times I get asked that question a day, right. And it's understandable. To be honest with you, I'm of the opinion I think that's the smart move for the league for a couple of reasons. One, when you have no in-arena sound and you have no public address announcer and you have no fans and you have nothing, and I've been in that built those facilities at Wide World of Sports. I've been there because I've had friends, children that were playing in AAU tournaments, and you literally can hear everything. I mean, you can hear everything. There was probably 27 people at each game, and there were 4 games going on in the building I was in, which is why I thought this was always a big possibility, because they have multiple facilities where they could put an NBA court. You could have 4 games going on at once, and no one would even see each other. But you hear everything. You hear the slightest regular conversation between a husband and wife talking negatively about the official or somebody on the other team or something. You can hear it. And so when that comes through, now you've got 4 broadcast teams, 2 TV, 2 radio, trying to hype up and basically yelling into a microphone. As I always say, we're a bunch of screaming idiots into a microphone, which makes no sense because the microphone's meant to amplify our voice. But everybody's going to hear everything. And so how do you curtail that if a referee makes a bad call? How do you curtail that if there's a play that you disagree with how a player went about, defending someone, whether it was a cheap shot or something like that, and you say that, and tensions can get high. So I just don't think it's a good idea that in that manner. And let's be honest, if you're going by the revenue thing, sending 220 more people to Orlando, they're not giving them those rooms for free. They're not giving them food for free. You're going to have to pay for that lodging and that stuff too. And at a time when revenue has gone down, I would totally understand why they said, "Hey, we're going to do it. We're going to have a worldwide feed that's going to be pumped into different places, and you guys are going to do it from here, X, Y, or Z." I would love to do it from FedEx Forum. I would love it if there was a way where they could kind of monitor the game and in the sound booth. I don't know if it's even possible, and try to add some ambient sound to it. If not, so be it. But they'll figure it out. There's people much smarter than me that are going to make that decision.
Do you think there's going to be pumped in sound?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know if they will do it in Orlando or if they do it somehow electronically. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I've watched a couple of the golf tournaments, and they're all spread out. The TV trucks are there. The directors are in New York. The announcers are in California or whatever. It said the first tournament they showed, and I couldn't tell the difference. It's different because golf is so much more subdued by the announcers. They're not yelling to, like, hype it up or you know, Pete's not saying bingo or I'm not yelling ring it up, put three on the board or anything like that in a golf situation. But, you know, look, this is what we're trained to do. You know, we've honed our craft over, you know, two plus decades each. You know, if this is an adjustment we have to make, and I've talked to some of my buddies that are other radio announcers that have had to do this, they said it's not as hard as you think. You'll get into the rhythm and you just go with it.
Have you ever broadcast anything remotely before?
Not that went over the air. No, not that went over the air. What I did do was Brevin Knight's screen test. Pete was out of town. And when they wanted to check Brevin for the television, you know, color position, the analyst position, and it was me and Brevin in a studio, and it was not hard to generate excitement. We just watched the tape, and I'll never forget being in there. And I'd known Brevin from his time there, and I walked into our former boss, Randy Stevens' office, and he goes, "What do you think?" I said, "I think you'd be stupid not to hire him." So
it was a good.
Brevin
aced the screen test.
Oh. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like I've worked with some incredibly talented people over my time, and I, you know, Hank and Elliot, and now Michael Wallace, and then some analysts in football in California, and Brevin's as good as anybody I'd seen. And I had known that because back in his day when he was here, we actually did a weekly show on the initial station, or the competitor, you guys. Called the Drive and Dish, and he would come in, and it was like he would just go. I didn't even need to talk. Here, go. And for an hour, he could talk, and it was great. And so I had no doubt, but when he got in there and just the way he saw things on tape, too, the way he saw plays develop from his years of playing point guard, I was like, this is gold. And to be honest with you, I'm stunned, and I know he's gotten some national work. I'm stunned somebody hasn't come and given him more of a national presence and hired him for that stuff. But I get it. You know, you get big name guys that were multiple time All-Stars come in and want to do this. Yeah, I think he's better than a lot of guys they have on the national broadcast.
I think they were lucky
to have him.
Okay, so one of the bits of news here is that Davis Bertans is going to opt out of going to Orlando. Wizards forward Davis Bertans. He's a pending free agent, and he is coming off of two ACL injuries in his past. Once they crank the sucker up, you think all the Grizzlies are going to be there, don't you?
I believe so. I haven't heard any difference, and you know, I don't want to correct you, but Davis, how he says it now. Yeah, Davis, and I never understood that, but I get it from his perspective. To be honest with you, and this has always been the big question to me with this group: what happens when Washington and Phoenix go out there, if they go out there, and they're eliminated in three or four games? Even if they go 2-2, they can't catch the teams that are ahead of them. They literally can't do it. Who plays? If you're Washington, are you putting Bradley Beal out there for Davis Bertans? Is he going, hey, these eight games, I'd rather eat that salary, make sure my knee's right, and go try to cash in? Look, that's a guy, he's got ties to Taylor Jenkins. The Grizzlies don't have any money to spend, but had money to spend, that was a guy I would have believed they would target. Because he's a 3-and-D guy, and that's what, you know, this team wants to kind of build up around. So I don't blame that. I think the Grizzlies players will go. I think they're chomping at the bit. I know the coaching staff is, and I believe that they will be there. I heard what you said about the Justice Winslow interview, and I get it. Look, I totally understand them thinking that, but in this situation, this is something we've never faced before. This isn't like, hey, the owners tried this once and they did this and it blew up in their face. No one's ever even had a contingency plan for this per se. So now what do? You try to recoup what you can. People need an outlet. If you can be at home and watch and you can keep the players safe and we can monitor that, again, why I believe we don't go as broadcasters or anybody non-essential to the immediate game, i.e. referees, statisticians, players, coaches, give it a shot. So there'll be some other guys that sit out, I believe, some guys that maybe are close to, you know, the end of a contract like that or have an injury situation. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge is out. We already know – Bojan Bogdanovic from the Jazz, not Bogdan from Sacramento, is not going to play because of wrist surgery. And those injuries can affect people, and it can also affect teams like the Grizzlies who now have everybody healthy. So that's an interesting thing to watch too.
Do you like the position the Grizzlies are in, and do you think it was fair the way it has been set up, that they have a better chance than any of the others competing for the eighth to get the eighth spot, but they didn't just go, they didn't just go top eight?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's fair. I do, because the Grizzlies did have, they had 15 games left, I believe. And of those 15 games, 14 of those games are against teams that are going to be in Orlando. And they were done with Sacramento. They were done with Phoenix. They still had two with Toronto. I don't need to run through the schedule, but I think it's fair. And I think as a player, you want to play your way in. I think it would have been, I would have understood if they said, hey, we're just going to minimize this as best we can, and so we're going to go with the 16 teams there. The fact is that Portland was going to get Jusuf Nurkić back, and they had two games with the Grizzlies. If the Grizzlies had won that game on March 12th, when this all got shut down, when we were sitting in Portland and watching it all happen right before our eyes, it would have been hard for them to catch them. 4.5 games and 14 to play is a lot to make up. But I get that they want to let teams play it in, and I think that's fair. I do. I know some fans think they were trying to, they were trying to just get Zion Williamson in. Not necessarily. I mean, I can see why people would believe that. But you want to make it as fair as possible. Those teams were within striking distance. Somebody between Sacramento and New Orleans, if the Grizzlies had lost that game in Portland, along with the Blazers, one of the other teams would have been 2.5 games out. So you had two teams with 2.5 games out, and one of them, if it had been Sacramento, has the tiebreaker with the Grizzlies because they had won the season series. So why would it be fair for them not to be able to play out their games, and all of a sudden they're just, I get it, because this is something we've never dealt with, but I think they did it as best they possibly could and made up as many games as they possibly could without creating a situation where you're playing into October.
What do you think of the Grizzlies' new assistant?
Boy, he was a strappy player. When I heard the name, I was like, okay, why do I know that name? And then I looked it up, and I remember Blake as a player at Missouri State, seen, just a couple games and during tournament week, and then I saw him in like preseason stuff and summer leagues and things like that. I have a couple of guys that have worked in the league as coaches that I'm still friends with that are not coaching. They'll tell me usually right away, and I got text messages immediately that said, you're going to love him. He's a great guy, great coach. Again, I think it's one of those situations, like when you look at baseball, you see a lot of catchers go into coaching, guys that know how to control the game, things like that. Point guards are the same thing in basketball. And so he was a scrappy, tough player that got to the ultimate level and played professionally overseas, and he's been coaching. I think it's not a surprise that he's got ties to San Antonio. I think we're going to see a lot of that in the future with Taylor Jenkins, and rightfully so. That coaching tree has sprouted a ton of branches off of Greg Popovich, and they've tended to be pretty successful when in the right situation. So I like it. I'm incredibly happy for Coach Ivy to be the new head coach at Notre Dame for the women's team, a place where she played and was an absolute star. It's going to be closer to her son, who signed a letter of intent to play at Purdue as a freshman this year, which is only about an hour and a half, 2 hour drive to my knowledge. But they're in Indiana still. And for her, it's a chance to go home, but we will miss her. She was great. And, Ja Morant had a wonderful relationship with Neil Ivy. And, I never got the chance to ask her, and I hope we get to the day where we don't look at it as Neil Ivy, female NBA coach. We looked at it as Neil Ivy, coach in the NBA, and I think our guys respected that. So that was a tough loss, but I think this is a great way to pick up, and I think it goes to show that the front office is on top of their game. These guys have done a remarkable job over the past, basically, what, Jeff, 13 months since they took over? Right. Right around now, last time this year, or a little bit earlier in May, and look at the turnaround. You and I were talking about it right after I left the radio show about how, boy, this summer is going to really determine what happens with this franchise. They've got some real work to do, and I don't think anybody could have thought they would do the job to this level. It's exceeded all expectations.
It did help that a year ago they drafted this young fella named Ja Morant, practically exactly a year ago. Listen, we expected a lot, but he has, I would say, exceeded all expectations. He's been unbelievable.
100%. But think about this. Teams have had number two picks before and messed them up.
Oh, they there's no question. This team has had a number two pick before and messed it up.
I don't want to bring that up. Old Mr. Heisley's, Mr. Heisley, rest in peace, his great quote when he was on with our former colleague, Chris Vernon, when he had an interview. He goes, oh, now we're going to talk about how bad to beat was. Well, yeah, we kind of have to. I hate to tell you. You kind of have to when you swing and miss like that. But from the day they got that pick, I mean, the next day you knew who they wanted. There was no doubt. The mock drafts after the draft lottery happened never changed that John Morant would be the number two pick because they made it known. This is our guy. This is who we want. This is our guy. We're not – R.J. Barrett can say he doesn't want to play here. R.J. Barrett can say he's not going to work out here. R.J. Barrett can say he wants to be in New York. All he wants, good. Have at it, guy. Good luck to you. You're going to be a terrific player. This is the guy we want. This is the guy we think is going to change our franchise. And, you know, that's the thing. He plays with that chip on his shoulder. And we're seeing these videos. And someone brought this up to me, and I thought it was remarkable. Remember, he didn't play. You know, he had that scope on his knee. He didn't play in summer league, and he probably was figuring out what he could. He's so far removed from that now. You know, his knee's that much stronger, and he's still got room to grow. It's scary. I literally almost watched two of my really good friends throw things at each other because one of them said, I just want them to get a superstar. And like the entire table looked at him and said, what do you think they have in the making right now? There is talk about him constantly about how much this city is ecstatic to have a player of this caliber that clearly, at least by all opticals, wants to be here, and I can tell you from being around here, wants to be here and is down to build this franchise back into a perennial playoff contender. And with the type of star power in the terms of the youth that they have and the role players that they have, this isn't going anywhere. If you look at that roster, especially after the trade to get Justice Winslow, you've got a roster of, you know, 26 and under that most of them are signed to multiple years. That's a pretty fun thing to think about when we finally get through all this pandemic stuff, which is clearly, by the way, and I don't want to downplay it, more important than sports as a whole. You know, our health and safety takes precedent over all of it. But when we do figure this out, and we will because there's brilliant people working on it as a country, when we get back to basketball as normal, this team is going to be scary. They're going to be on national TV. They're going to get the respect that everybody here has yearned for. And barring anything majorly disastrous happening, they're going to be on the forefront of a lot of people around the country's minds because they're going to be that fun to watch.
Eric, I've taken too much time. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your new hip, and I hope to see you soon.
Now it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond every weekday around 10 a.m.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Talladega by Eric Church. Thought Talladega would be in the news today because of the National Civil Rights Museum branded car that will be participating in the, I guess, delayed race. Obviously, it is in the news for more unfortunate reasons now.
Welcome back, by the way. Did you have a good break?
I had a great break. I went up to Northern Arkansas with my family, and I sat by a lake, and in some cases sat on a lake, and basically ignored the outside world for a week. So, good stuff.
What's the best thing you cooked, and what's the best book you read?
The best thing I cooked, the most dramatic thing I cooked was paella, which I do every year on vacation now. I usually do a seafood paella when we go to the beach. I did a chicken, lamb, and chorizo paella up in the mountains, and that was the most visually impressive thing I cooked. I think the best thing I cooked was the chicken I grilled. I did two meals. We sort of divvy up the cooking among me and my dad and my brothers. I did a grilled chicken that was a paprika rub, and you grill French bread, and you put the chicken on top of the French bread, and then you char lemons, and you squeeze the charred lemon juice, and so the French bread that's toasted soaks up the chicken juice and the chicken spice and the charred lemon, and it's really good.
Really? Where'd you get that recipe?
I don't remember. remember. I found it online somewhere. So I was just Googling grilled chicken recipes, and I found probably Epicurious. That's where most of my recipes I find online come from.
Yeah, and what's the best book you read?
I only completed one book while I was there, and it was a as some other things I have in progress. It was a page-turner by Ross Thomas, who's a sort of political crime fiction, genre fiction writer of the 60s, 70s, 80s. I read a book of his called The Singapore Wink.
And? Good?
Yeah, good. Not my favorite book of his I've read. So that's not, you know, that's not what I would recommend to people if they want to read Ross Thomas.
What's your favorite?
But I enjoyed it.
Do you know the one that you would recommend?
Briar Patch, which they just did a not very good TV series based on, is a book that's really good. And there's one with what now politically incorrect name, but still a good book called Chinaman's Chance.
Okay. All right. You are back and doing the early word, I saw, up early doing the Mary Casciola's column, which I enjoyed this morning. We got a whole lot of news to get to. Let's start NBA.
Yep.
The Grizzlies hired an assistant, Blake Ahern. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't. I you know, I've done some poking around, but I did not poke around on that particular subject, which is not of particular interest to me. Obviously, there's a relationship there with Taylor Jenkins from the Austin days, and a lot of times in coaching hires, you see those kind of relationships. It doesn't seem, based on what Drew Hill reported, it doesn't seem like that's more of a lower assistant. It's not the Neil Ivey replacement.
Okay. Then there is also Justice Winslow did a long interview where he talked about going into the bubble and wondered about the issues and said it was iffy. Evidently, he was not saying that he was iffy about whether he would go. He was just saying, this kind of seems iffy. The whole thing seems, and I think it does all seem a little iffy.
It does seem iffy.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think there's a league-wide question of, I think they're going to move forward. I think this is going to happen. But I think it's not just a battery of individual players making, or individual people, not just players making decisions about whether they're going to personally go through it. I think there's, you know, at some level, the league is keeping an eye on everything that's happening. And so, like, I don't think you can say for certain this is happening until it happens.
Right. I think that's right. Well, it's funny because the NHL, Austin Matthews, great NHL player, tested positive. And the NHL, I think there's a real sense that they may just say, you know, it's not worth it. And the reason the NHL might do it is they get so little money from TV that the players, it's not going to, if the players pull the plug, it's not really costing them that much money because most of the money they get comes from in-person attendance in the NHL. It's a little different calculus in the NBA, but I think every day, like, there's this, are we going to do this? And then we do have the individual players as well. Davis Bertans saying he is going to, I guess, is he the first one we know who's going to opt out?
I believe he's the first one officially, or at least that's been reported that has officially done so, yeah.
And it's going to cost him $600,000, evidently, but he's going to be a pending free agent. And this sort of, it does sort of highlight the question which you raised of who should have been invited here in the first place.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, this is the reason why I thought they should have just gone straight to 16, not because that would have been better for the Grizzlies, but because you would have been able to complete a full playoffs with the minimum number of teams you need. And so that's the reason I would have done that. But even if you wanted to expand it out beyond that, like I to this day, I don't know why the Wizards and Suns were invited. To me, they were not really involved in playoff races. And to me, those two teams were totally gratuitous. To bring in.
The Wizards evidently are quote-unquote supporting him and his decision. And you'll always hear that. Like, you have to support anyone who decides not to go, right? Don't I mean, in the end.
For if you want to maintain a relationship with that player, which presumably they would like to try to re-sign him. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think generally it's bad form to you know, when Adam Silver has said people can either come or not, you can't really be trashing someone who then exercises the right to not come. The Grizzlies have some. Do they have what are the personnel decisions as we roll towards this?
I think there's a chance that things will be quiet on the Grizzlies front. They have 14 players under contract. They have one open roster spot. The assumption has been and continues to be, and it was reported, I believe, by Mark Stein, although I'm reporting nothing that we haven't already said, and that I'll say again, they're going to re-sign Anthony Tolliver. And so Anthony Tolliver will re-sign, and you know, a lot of people thought he never left to begin with, but my understanding is that contract was up and that roster spot is technically open. I have that on pretty good authority. But they are expected to re-sign Anthony Tolliver when they are eligible to do so, which will be tomorrow. And so that would bring the roster back to 15. And at that point, there's two questions. One, are any players going to opt out? Those are individual decisions for the players to make, and they have a couple days to make them. Based on what I know, I don't anticipate any Grizzlies players opting out, but I guess you never know. And then from the team standpoint, is there anything they want to actively do, even though their roster will be full when they sign Tolliver? And my understanding is that is unlikely, that they will go with what they got.
Do you have any sense as to whether we're going to get the schedule this week? I had heard some rumblings we might.
It has not been officially said that will come this week, but there's an expectation, or I should say a strong hope bordering on expectation that is going to come this week. Yeah.
We over the weekend, we had the year anniversary of the drafting of Ja Morant. Looking back on lottery night, remember there was the report, the Grizzlies have already decided to draft Ja Morant.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think that was? What do you make of that report in retrospect?
Oh, I think the Grizzlies had probably essentially decided they were going to take Ja Morant. I doubt they had told Ja Morant that, but I think internally, I suspect it was we'll take a look at it, but like, you know, come on, we're going to take Ja Morant. It's not like the Grizzlies hadn't thought about it until that moment that they got the pick. They've been scouting all year and probably talking about it all year in terms of what they thought about players. And so I'm sure the moment they got the number two pick that they considered themselves very likely to take Ja Morant.
And relative to your expectations, how has Ja Morant been?
Oh, my expectations were pretty high, but I would say he exceeded them. He looks like, and we wrote about it all year, talked about it all year, I wrote about it. He shows every signs of being one of the league's elite guards, an all-NBA, all-star level lead guard, a little bit of Chris Paul, a little bit of pick your guy who goes up and dunks on people, you know, Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Johnson, whatever. He's sort of a hybrid of those things, and a hybrid of those things is an all-NBA player. He's got a chance to be the best small guard of his era. And so, I mean, that's pretty high.
Yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun. All right, turning to the world generally, the COVID thing is, as we really expected in some ways and should have known and did expect, it's complicated. You describe a faucets going on and off. But what's happening now is the numbers of positives are going way up. The numbers of deaths are pretty small, but it's a lagging indicator. Younger people are out there.
Well, and this county reported 11 yesterday, which was a pretty high number for Shelby County.
Yeah. For the country, though, it was yesterday. For the country, yesterday was 297. Even if that's because it's a load, it's been 550, 600 basically for seven days in a row now, which is half of what it was a month ago and half again of what it was 2 months before that. So the deaths have been pretty low.
To me, that suggests if there's a divergence in the degree to which cases are rising and the degree to which deaths are rising, if there's a divergence between those two lines, I mean, I'm no doctor, but it seems to me it suggests at least a couple things. One thing it could suggest is that the disease is spreading to more people who are unlikely to die from it, which doesn't mean that their lives won't be impacted in serious ways, but it's spreading to populations that will have lower fatality rates, which is not necessarily a good thing, but it is that. And it also could suggest that, you know, we're getting a little bit better at treating the disease when it occurs, right? And I suspect there's some of both of those things at work.
Yeah, I think there's actually, I imagine there's probably three things. One is, let's check back on the deaths in 2 or 3 weeks. One is. And then secondly, I think you're right. The treatments, we have a better idea how to treat it. And there's no question. The mean age in Orange County and around Orlando now of the person who tests positive is 35, which is dramatically lower than it was a month ago. And so what you're seeing is as more young people are out moving around, more young people are getting it, or younger people, and those people are less apt to die from it. I guess the question is, what does this all mean?
It looks like as we speak, the today's numbers came out, and the Shelby County Health Department is now reporting more than 200 new cases today. Right. That means three times in the past 7 days, or maybe the past 8 days. No, going back to last Monday. Last Monday was the 250 something, and then Saturday was the 300 and something.
385, yeah.
Yes, and then today, now over 200 again. We had never had more than 200 cases reported. Now, some of these reporting doesn't mean the cases all happened the day before, right? It's
after reports. No, because yesterday was 44, and so some probably came in from yesterday. Yeah.
But we had never had more than 200 cases reported in a day until last Monday, and now three times since last Monday that's happened. So this is not a case of just more testing.
No,
this is
no. There's more spread. The positivity rate is much higher. It's very clearly right. There's more out in the community in Memphis than Shelby County than there has ever been. So, and we've had the, since you were away, we had the mask ordinance passed. There's a piece Jennifer Biggs did up today on grocery store compliance, which is actually pretty positive in terms of the level of grocery store compliance. But what in the world, like, what do we get? Both like in Shelby County, but then beyond, I don't sense much appetite for ratcheting back.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think the biggest issue here has been individual people's individual decisions, and people sort of having fatigue with it or not taking it seriously enough from the beginning. I think locally, I think that's been the bigger story.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a question of, you know, we set up this process, the city, the county, the task force, whatever, set up this process that's, we're data-driven, and this is the process, and, you know, nothing's guaranteed. We could go forward. We could go back. They set up this process that makes sense, but they haven't really, really followed it. Even from the very beginning, you know, you started because the state intervened in relative, you know, to some things, and because, you know, the outline, you know, municipality right. squawked, and then so
they
from the
their
very
haircuts.
Beginning,
right? Yeah,
yeah. So from the very beginning, we were like nipping and tucking around the rules they'd set up, and then it seemed like we moved forward. There was this appetite for moving forward, even if the data didn't totally suggest we should. And it doesn't seem to be from the very beginning. It was we can loosen, we can turn the faucet to for more flow. We can also turn it back and tighten. We can loosen and we can tighten. And I don't see any appetite for tightening. And the evidence on the ground would suggest not that, well, we should hold off on moving forward. There's plenty of evidence to suggest we should move back. And I don't know if we're going to have a community appetite to do that.
There may, however, be, I mean, I was kind of surprised by Jennifer's assessment of what was happening in grocery stores, that it was not just from the employees, but from the shoppers, was and maybe what will happen here is more individual compliance, more community compliance with what we should have been doing all along. Even if
right.
they're not ratcheting back, more
well, that's
people.
That's what we're going to have because they can do this mask ordinance, but they're not going to enforce it. So we're going to have. I mean, I hope it has an impact. I hope that, you know, I think the idea is that you give restaurants and businesses a little bit more backing to try
right.
to enforce things they could have been enforcing on their own already, but now they can point to something. And I hope that has an impact. But ultimately, like, we're not really going to be enforcing this thing, and so it is going to still be about different methods of encouragement and education of individual citizens and hoping those individual citizens make the right decisions.
You told us long ago that Memphis in May, there was no way they would happen.
That was about as easy a call as the Grizzlies are going to re-sign Anthony Tolliver.
Right. And of course that happened while you were away. To me, the big question is Shelby County Schools, University of Memphis, et cetera.
Right.
Right. Like, that's the big one. Do you have any, like, the last weeks of bad news? Any thought on what it might mean for that?
I haven't. You know, again, I've become very good at when I go on, like, vacation, not
turn
like some trips are like I'm going to visit relatives in Minnesota, and that's quite the same thing. But I'm going to the beach or
good
the lake, like, I shut down. I've become good at that or bad at that, or however you want to think about it, since I've had a couple kids. So I haven't had a chance to fully process. You know, there's been all this talk the last week, and I guess decisions are going to be made soon about altering the school schedule, and I think people need to be willing to be creative and open to stuff on that front. But that's all based on an assumption that kids will be in school, right? And so I think I agree that is the single biggest question we're having to confront. And those of us who have kids in school are going to confront it more than others, but it's a decision that is a community-wide impact.
Yeah. And that shapes the economy and everything else. People can't work if their kids aren't in school. Good to have you back, Chris. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington.
Don't miss the Jeff Calkins Show tomorrow at 9 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.